KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
East Oakland.
Lake Mary, Oakland, what's poppin'?
Me and my husband are from Berkeley, California.
Dakota and Union City.
La Mission.
Coming up, the booming Bay Area economy begs the question,
how much money the cities in the Bay Area spend on tax breaks for corporations.
Then we'll get a kite's eye view of the Bay Area's vibrant salt ponds and marshes.
It's a landscape is changing from the very exuberant colors of salt making, the bright greens and fuchsias and oranges and reds.
And a popular local artist finds a new life after facing eviction.
It's amazing. I'm lucky. I got to have a dream come true. What's even better than that? Wow, being able to go on and have another dream.
Silver Linings with Paul Madonna and your questions answered today on an extended edition of Cross Currents. Homeless mothers and their supporters gathered on the steps of San Francisco City Hall this afternoon to demand shelter. KALW's housing reporter Liza Veal has more.
We will fight for what? All power to the people!
These 40 or so demonstrators have a message for their city's leaders. No families should spend this Mother's Day on the street.
This is San Francisco. We can do better, and we're going to do better because we're going to force them to do better.
Between 1,700 and 3,000 children experience homelessness at some point over the course of 1 year in San Francisco. Meadow Sylvester's son is one of them.
He's at school right now. There's days that he's really exhausted because you don't get much sleep in the shelter.
School district data shows that homelessness among San Francisco students has actually gone down by 12% since 2014. But statistics like that don't mean much to Sylvester's son.
He's the homeless kid. He does get teased, but he's really strong. He just tells kids, so what? You know, I admire his bravado. You know what I mean? He's very secure with himself, which is great. I don't want that to change. You know, he gives me inspiration for sure.
The San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness organized today's demonstration. The group is calling for more than just shelter this Sunday night. They want to see two new shelters for families and provision of at least 500 housing subsidies. They're asking Mayor Ed Lee to add nearly $10 million to next year's budget to make it all happen.
Which sounds like a lot, but it's not for these guys. That's like breadcrumbs.
The coalition's Jennifer Friedenbach addressed the crowd.
Right now in San Francisco, as we speak, we have pregnant women who are out on the streets.
Coincidentally, that money may have just materialized. Over the weekend, the local nonprofit Tipping Point announced a pledge of $100 million to cut chronic homelessness in the city in half. It's the largest private donation to the city for this cause that's ever been made. Most of the money will go into mental health services and building new permanent supportive housing, like the kind that finally provided a home to Jacqueline Evans after years of living in shelters.
I went to a program, you know, that way I could be somewhere safe with my son, and then got into an SRO. I mean, it's not the best, but it's mine for me and my son, and this will be my first Mother's Day in my own place with my own everything.
In San Francisco, I'm Liza Veal for KALW News.
Thanks to Claire Strempel for helping to report that piece. Now we're going to answer your questions. Last year, we launched our people-powered journalism project, Hey Area. Have you tried it out? You tell us what you find mysterious about the region, and our reporters track down the answers. We've answered questions like this one from Michael Mackin.
So can BART damage your hearing?
What?
I'm wondering if the loud sound on BART can damage your hearing.
The answer? It's possible. And listener Austin Newsom asked,
what the water quality of the bay is and who keeps track of that?
It's actually better than it used to be. Find those answers at KALW.org. But right now, we're dedicating our show today to answering your latest questions. San Francisco has the strongest economy of any city in the U.S. And with business booming, a lot of eyes are on local corporations to see if they're giving back to the local community by paying their fair share in taxes. KALW listener Eli Dart had a question, and our economics reporter Jeremy Dalmas tried to find an answer.
I met up with Eli Dart at UC Berkeley. He lives in Castro Valley, but he works near campus here. And he had a question I thought might be a little tricky to answer.
How much money the cities in the Bay Area spend on tax breaks for corporations to get them to locate in a particular place or do a particular thing? How much money goes to that? And what do we get for that money that we pay, right? And so basically, from a citizen's perspective, is that a good value?
It seems like a pretty reasonable thing for a local citizen to want to know. Twitter got a much publicized tax break after moving to San Francisco's mid-market neighborhood in 2012. The Raiders recently announced that they are moving to Las Vegas, partially because the city of Oakland didn't want to fund a new football stadium. Do you have any idea what the answer might be?
No.
Well, I can go look into it and see what I find.
Thank you for doing this.
So Dart wants the answer for the whole Bay Area. That seems like it could be complicated. I'll start in San Francisco City Hall.
My name is Ted Egan, and I'm the chief economist in the controller's office in San Francisco.
Egan says there are only two business taxes in San Francisco, and businesses can only get a break on one of those taxes, the payroll tax.
Payroll tax is basically a tax on the wages and salaries of your employees in San Francisco.
So the more salary a business pays, the more they get taxed. And sometimes San Francisco wants to get businesses to do specific things. So they give them a break from paying some or all of their payroll taxes for a limited number of years. For example, in 2004, the city completely stopped charging payroll tax to certain biotech companies. The goal was to get biotech in the city in order to create more economic diversity here.
There's a lot of biotech research coming out of UCSF, but before they did this, there were zero biotech companies in San Francisco, and they were all in South San Francisco.
5 years after the tax break started, the city had around 60 biotech companies. Egan says this was partially because the tax break made San Francisco more affordable for these businesses, but also it was good advertising, like a big sign in San Francisco that said, "We like biotech." In 2014, companies got to save $2 million in taxes because of the biotech exemption. But the biggest payroll tax break that the city gives out is for businesses here in the mid-market neighborhood. That's the one that Twitter gets for having its headquarters right over there on Market between 9th Street and 10th Street. Spotify and Zendesk also have offices that are just a few blocks down. City officials had been trying to attract more businesses to this area for years.
It's pretty clear that if the goal of that tax was to bring businesses to Central Market, it worked. The sort of harder question to answer is, did it just move economic activity from one part of the city to the other, and the city as a whole didn't get anything out of it?
Egan says this is a question we will likely never be able to answer, even though he wrote a whole report for the city on this tax break. It's unclear which companies would have left the city without it, taking all of their tax money with them. But we do know that these mid-market businesses saved around $34 million in 2014 under the tax cut. So let's try to answer our first question. How much money does San Francisco give out in tax breaks to businesses? We go through the paperwork of the half dozen exemptions in the city.
Enterprise Zone, I believe, is still going on. Clean Technology. Central Market.
And for the most recent year I got all the numbers for, which is 2014, businesses in San Francisco saved $47,302,998 in payroll taxes. And most of that $47 million came from the mid-market tax break. A different way to look at this, though, is not how much money the city lost or gained, but how effective the tax breaks are. They're a tool. One that the city can use to encourage companies to do specific things. But they are, usually, not a good way to bring in revenue.
It's easy to design a tax incentive that loses money, and it's very hard to design a tax incentive that makes money. So the real reason jurisdictions do it is to achieve, as you say, other economic development objectives like jobs or neighborhood revitalization or creating employment opportunities for disadvantaged groups or things like that.
And it's up to elected leaders and the public to decide if the result is worth the cost. I have another question, though. Is San Francisco just taking money from other Bay Area cities? Like, if San Francisco didn't provide that tax break and Twitter had moved to, say, Mountain View, would Mountain View residents get that extra tax money?
Well, that's a fair point to make, except San Francisco's business taxes are way higher than anybody else's. So if they had moved to Mountain View, they'd be paying a small fraction of the business tax they pay in San Francisco.
San Francisco brings in around $600 million in business taxes right now. That's 15 times as much revenue as San Jose, which is a bigger city population-wise. Egan says that the only other Bay Area city that has a sizable business tax is Oakland, and they don't have any tax incentives for businesses to move there. That new Uber office that's headed to downtown Oakland, no tax breaks. No tax breaks in Berkeley either.
Well, what does the Bay Area do for, like, attract companies? And the reality is we don't really do very much at all. It's just not something we've ever really needed in the Bay Area.
So I phone Eli Dart back and give him his answer. I have a number for you.
Okay.
$47,302,998. I also do go into all the details with him.
Wow. Okay. All right. So it's sounding to me, based on what you found, like this is a reasonable policy tool that doesn't cost a huge amount of money on balance. My fear was that there was a whole bunch of money being spent on essentially corporate giveaways.
If you want to try and evaluate a tax break for yourself, let's take the mid-market one as an example. It's pretty clear that it brought new businesses to this part of San Francisco, but it's unclear how much money it actually cost the city. So if you like what it did and are fine with uncertainties around the cost, then corporate tax incentives might be a policy that you should support in the future. Underneath the Twitter sign on Market Street, I'm Jeremy Dalmas for Cross Currents.
Jeremy Dalmas is KALW's economics reporter. You can reach out to him at economy@kalw.org. Coming up next on Cross Currents, a listener asks about the view from above SFO Airport.
When the plane takes that right-hand turn and goes up the bay, at the southern end of the bay, there's a lot of bizarre colors and squares, and it just made me wonder, what is all that?
We've got answers. That's coming up right after a quick break.
Hi, this is Nina Gensler-Debs here with Stephen Short on Cross Currents.
Howdy.
And I'm so excited that we have a Hay Area show today. I actually help co-manage Hay Area. And the most amazing thing about Hay Area is that we are doing exactly what we are supposed to do, which is a public service, answering questions that you have about really complicated things like tax breaks. 47 million is a really big number, but he breaks it down for us, and it's awesome to be able to do that with our listeners. So if you support that kind of reporting, give us a call at 800-525-9917.
We're not looking for 47 million. No, not KALW. We're only, well,
hey, if you got it, though.
We'll take it, or even a portion of it. But what we are looking for is $500 right now, because we have a matching grant from three listeners, Mary Reese in Albany and Catherine and Peter Streetman of Sausalito, and Anne McLeod of Mill Valley have pooled together.
And 18 calls or clicks will get us there. 18 calls or
18
clicks.
18 calls or clicks. And mm-hmm. If you want to make the call, that's at 800-525-9917. And if you want to make the web donation, it's kalw.org.
You've got options.
Yeah. And we have some other options, too. But
we do. And the great thing about KALW is that we have this local reporting that goes into every nook and cranny of the Bay Area. And hey, in Hay Area, we've gone to a BART train to see how loud it is. We have traveled to various streets to see why certain names are missing. We have gone to mid-market, and it's amazing that we can do that, and we can have that with our global programming, the BBC, the CBC, programming from all over the world and all over the Bay Area from where you live. So please support that kind of programming at 800-525-9917 or at kalw.org.
So you can keep in mind that we have local and global coverage.
We have 32 hours of original programming every week.
In addition to material from around the world, that's not bad for a little station like us. And we support local arts, too, in addition to these Hay Area reports. I think of the Hay Area as the kind of thing that you can live your life without knowing, but it's more fun if you do know it. And that's one of our tenets here is fun and joy.
It's connecting you more deeply to the place you live, or maybe you're just visiting here for work, but local public radio that tells these kind of informative, joyous stories is what connects you more deeply to your neighbors, to the town you live in, and to the next town. 800-525-9917. Thank you so much for supporting. We're going back to the Hay Area Show to answer another Hay Area question.
Welcome back to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Almost everyone who flies into San Francisco or San Jose Airport has seen it, a vibrant patchwork quilt of colorful water. There on the southern edge of the bay, you can see bright pinks, pumpkin oranges, neon greens, and deep magentas, contrasted against the dark blues of the natural bay water. The last time KALW listener Donna Staten peered out an airplane window, she saw it too.
When the plane takes that right-hand turn and goes up the bay, at the southern end of the bay, there's a lot of bizarre colors and squares, and some are big white squares on the water, and some are pink squares on the water, and a lot of the water looks brown. And it just made me wonder, what is all that, and why doesn't the bay have a more natural coastline at the southern end?
So she asked KALW, and we sent out environment reporter Angela Johnston to tell us more.
To get the best view of what Donna's talking about, it helps to have a kite. Just ask kite aerial photographer Chris Benton. You can find him here at the Baylands most weekends, talking to his kite like a pet as he slowly coaxes it up into the air.
There we go. I'm going to send it up, I think, just a little bit higher. There we go. And it's just absolutely wonderful holding this line and being connected to this big invisible mass of air that's floating past us. Very satisfying.
Benton's kite is blue and white with a long tail that looks like a red feather boa. But the really cool thing about it is how he can fasten a digital camera to the line and send it up hundreds of feet in the air to snap pictures below.
When I first started photographing down here, it was largely an intoxication with the sort of color and texture of the place.
That was over a decade ago when Benton took a sabbatical from his job as an architecture professor at Berkeley to work with a microbiologist. The biologist photographed the Bay Area landscape from his microscope, and Benton captured the same area from above. One day, they came here, on the water's edge of the South Bay.
And I was immediately taken. Such a visually exuberant landscape. And now this is 10 years later, and I'm still photographing.
This visually exuberant landscape, the reds and the corals and deep oranges outlined with bright white borders, they look like they could be natural. But the colorful squares are man-made salt ponds, engineered to extract and harvest salt from the salinity of the bay water. All 8,000 acres of ponds are now managed by a company named Cargill.
Cargill's harvesting about 600 tons of salt here in the South Bay. You can see the big stack of salt down in Newark. It's the one remaining salt plant.
The mud and the Mediterranean climate make it a great place to harvest salt from the water. A handful of family-owned businesses kickstarted the industry over a century ago, before they were all bought up by Cargill.
These are the remnants, really, of what is still an active enterprise, the evaporation of bay water to produce salt. Salt for industrial use and sometimes for the culinary use.
Salt for icy roads, salt for pretzels, and salt that eventually sits on your dining room table, after it's been cleaned up, of course. You can find it under the brand name Diamond Crystal. Salt making is a pretty simple process. Slightly salty bay water flows into one pond, and then gravity does its magic. The salt water works its way from pond to pond to pond, and as it does, it gets saltier and saltier through evaporation.
Those are colors related to the salinity of the salt ponds. and they're produced by microorganisms.
As the water gets saltier, fewer things can survive in it. And that's why we get those magenta and bright pink colors. Only a few types of algae and bacteria can bear the saltiest of ponds. They're called halophiles, salt lovers. And these salt lovers tend to be pretty colorful.
So each band of salinity will host one or two types of halophiles. They go through a whole range of greens and reds and oranges and yellows.
Photographer Chris Benton moves the camera with a radio airplane controller. He walks around the baylands for hours, adjusting the camera and taking photos every other second, sometimes running back and forth to make sure the camera doesn't fall into the water. He likes to use a kite because it can go high enough in the air to give perspective, but low enough to notice changes in the landscape, changes away from commercial salt.
What I'm trying to do is capture the transition we're experiencing today, which is as rapid and dramatic, really, as almost anything that's happened before. Going in a happy direction, too.
As part of a huge effort called the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project, the Cargill Salt Company has freed almost 16,000 acres of their salt ponds.
We stopped making salt and we started managing for wildlife instead.
Cheryl Strong is a biologist with the project. I meet her at the Don Edwards National Wildlife Refuge in Fremont, a spot where a lot of this restoration work is happening. We walk up a hill and peer down at salt ponds in the midst of transformation, back into their natural state, marshland. The process, like making salt, is also really simple.
Literally going in with an excavator and cutting a hole through the levee.
Allowing the tide to come in and out twice a day, like it does naturally.
And as it comes in, it brings in sediment, it brings in seeds, and that's how you start to build your marsh.
It takes a bit more planning for the ponds that have walking trails along the levees or power towers running through them. But otherwise, it's pretty easy.
By the tide coming in and out, it's sort of doing it for free for you, right?
Take, for example, a salt pond the project opened up to the tides in 2006. Workers dug open the levees with a backhoe and watched nature do its work.
It is already growing a massive amount of native tidal marsh within it, and we already have our two endangered species using that pond in less than 10 years. So that was like a huge success story and happened much faster than we thought it would.
So far, the project has restored about half a dozen salt ponds in the South Bay, with three more coming in the next 5 years. In response, Bay Area-specific species like the salt marsh harvest mouse and a bird called the Ridgeway rail have bounced back. Another bonus, says Cheryl Strong, protection from sea level rise.
Silicon Valley is built up against these salt ponds, and they are currently providing some level of flood protection, but they are not flood protection levees. If we can get some tidal marsh built out in front of those ponds or turn some of those ponds back into tidal marsh, they will provide a much better buffer for sea level rise as we see those sea levels increase.
But as these areas transform from salt pond to marsh, the vibrant colors change too.
You're going to see a lot more natural blues and greens on the landscape because we don't have that end result of high salinity water at the end.
Photographer Chris Benton witnesses this change from the camera on his kite.
I won't say to my dismay as a photographer, but to my slight regret as a photographer, it's a landscape that's changing from the very exuberant colors of salt making, the bright greens and fuchsias and oranges and reds, to more natural tones as salt making gives way to restored marsh.
Moving towards the green marshland that once carpeted most of the South Bay. And he's okay with that. And so is Donna Staten, our listener who asked about the salt ponds.
I'm not sad. I think trying to protect natural wetlands is above all going to be most important for us going down the road. So people can take pictures now and we can look at them in books and online, but the natural habitat will probably be much better off in its natural state.
In the South Bay, for Cross Currents, I'm Angela Johnston.
Angela Johnston is KLW's environmental reporter. Drop her a line at environment@klw.org. Coming up next on Cross Currents, we'll hear the story of a Bay Area artist whose big break came with a caveat.
You know, they were very clear. They said, you have 6 months and you can be out of the paper any day. We'll just see how this goes.
A conversation with longtime San Francisco Chronicle illustrator Paul Madonna about his strip All Over Coffee and his new book. But first, let's check in on the drive.
This is Nina Gensler-Debs back with Stephen Short. And I have to say, I was so excited when that question came in, mainly because I have flown over the city so many times. I'm born and raised here, and I have always wondered what those weird colored parts were. And it's so great, A, to have the answer finally that it has to do with salinity, but it's also really nice knowing that other people are having that same experience I have had, like flying over the bay and stuff. It just is this feeling of community and that we're all in the same space and we all have these shared experiences together. That warms my little heart. So if it warms yours too, give us a call, 800-525-9917, or head to kalw.org. And we are in the middle of a challenge. And Stephen, how are we doing on that challenge?
Well, we're coming along, but I thought those colored pools had something to do with the summer of love. Talk about experience, man.
Those hippies.
That's the wrong. Anyway, that's not what it was. All right. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. But we do have a challenge. We're still looking, I think, for 13 more calls or clicks. And
by
if
the
we
end
get
of
that
the hour,
before this program is over, we get $500 in addition to the amount that you might give. How much should that be? Well, you tell us. We're not going to tell you what to do with that.
$50, $100, $47 million, which is the amount the city apparently gives in tax breaks. So 800-525-9917. Thank you very much.
And if you have already given, I want to say thank you, too. I mean, we often don't do that. We forget
thank
the many people who are already part of the KALW family. That's a word that we don't toss around lightly here. We do feel like it.
Emily Gittleman in San Francisco, thank you so much. Mina Aiken in San Francisco, we really appreciate you joining the KALW family. And this kind of reporting takes resources to go out to meet with people, to meet with the listeners who want to know those questions. So first of all, come join our family, donate so we can do more of this kind of reporting at 800-525-9917. But also, if you call our phone room or leave a comment on the website, tell us what you want us to report. We're here to serve you, and we want to know what you want us to answer. So 800-525-9917 is the number to call.
I like to do history stories because it gives me a little better knowledge of what's going on. But this is current. This is not history. This is some people who have already called in for us. It's Patrick Galvin. He says he's a big fan of Cross Currents. Good for him.
Thank you, Patrick. We're going to go right back to programming, not taking a second out. Thanks.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. If you've read the San Francisco Chronicle in the last 15 or so years, you probably saw something unique. Once a week, the paper published an illustration called All Over Coffee that showed a fresh view of San Francisco, accompanied by words of random insight. Artist Paul Madonna made that, quote, comic strip without the comic, and he's moved on to become a successful book author and illustrator. He took an unusual path, serving as Mad Magazine's first art intern before establishing himself in San Francisco and then being forced out of his home. That's the inspiration for his new book, On to the Next Dream. KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with Paul Madonna to talk about his work, and he began by asking him to read the opening passage of his book.
Imagine you're on an airplane. It's a long flight, international, crossing an ocean. It can be to anywhere. You decide. Pick someplace good, a place you love or have always dreamed of seeing. You've already boarded, stowed your luggage, fastened your seatbelt, and suffered the safety video. The plane has taken off and the cabin lights have dimmed. Maybe you've read a few pages of a novel, or maybe you've dialed up a movie, but either way, you've settled in and fallen asleep. Now everything is shaking. You open your eyes to see a stewardess with her hand on your shoulder. "Excuse me," she is saying. Her eyes are intense and hard. "You need to go," the stewardess says, and as she tugs you into the aisle, a new passenger slides into your seat. Without a word, this person kicks off their shoes, reaches into the seat back compartment, takes out the book you had started reading, and settles in. This makes you angry, but when you turn to give the stewardess a piece of your mind, she shoves you hard and you go stumbling down the aisle. You want to scream, "Wait," but then the door opens and a blast of cold air rushes in. She takes a deep breath and says, "The market has changed. We can now charge 5 times what you're paying for your seat.
which means you have to get out. But it's mid-flight, you say, and I've already paid for my ticket. You were only renting, she says, and we own. This is just the way things are, and she pushes you out the door.
So how much of what you wrote is fact and how much of it's fiction?
Well, there's not a lot of fact in here. I mean, my wife and I were evicted from our flat of 10 years in the Mission, and this was 2 years ago. And it forced me to redefine my definition of success. And I think that that's sort of the most frustrating part, even now that we've landed and we've gotten resettled, is that it forced this idea of monetary success to be a higher priority. Now, you know, making a living, of course, that has always been important to me. I think that was one of my benchmarks as a professional, not just because you had fans or someone reading your work, but because you were actually able to pay your bills. You didn't have to rely on anyone else in that regard. But when I couldn't then go buy a home, it said, well, how successful are you?
Well, of course, a home in San Francisco, I mean, it's exactly, like you said, redefining success for everybody for a while now.
Exactly. And I think that's one of those absurdities. The phrase I like is that we lose miles by slipping inches. And you sort of wake up and you realize that we are living in this outrageous situation, and you didn't realize it because it happened slowly over time. So, you know, the book itself is what I would call hyperbole. You know, it's a complete absurdist novella. The things that happen, the events that happen in here just are completely outrageous.
It's kind of a tweaked fantasia of life in San Francisco.
Even darker, yeah. And that's the point. The point is really to illustrate the absurdity that I felt was going on through the eviction.
So you also separate each chapter with an image, images of some iconic San Francisco, some more hidden San Francisco. So how did you use those to help tell the story?
Well, the best way to describe that is to explain that this started with my series All Over Coffee, which ran every Sunday in the Chronicle, and it was it had gotten to a point where it was just one image and one little short story, a piece of flash fiction or a quip or some small bit of text. And the idea there was that I was presenting a scene, a mood of the city and a mood of a story, and just allowing the reader to fill in the blanks. But what was also happening is I realized very quickly that by writing this story, I would ultimately be ending the series because it was about my relationship to San Francisco. It was about my relationship to myself, my work, everything I was doing. And there's something about change, I think, that if you try to hold on to everything else in your life exactly as it is while one thing is changing, you're going to have extreme friction. And you have to be flexible and allow some things to go. And you know, some things are going to get better because of it. You know, it's often when we hold on that we break something. And so there was this sense of, okay, I've been living my life a certain way and with a certain point of view. And now all of that is changing. And so the drawings, these sort of idyllic and timeless, moody images of San Francisco, I suddenly couldn't draw them anymore. Then when I realized that I couldn't draw the city the way that I used to, I infused these burn marks onto the drawings. And I began leaving spaces of the image undrawn and drawing these sort of burnt edges around them. And then I worked that idea into the story. And so through the course of the book, the drawings disappear because we're essentially left with nothing. And that whiteness, that empty space could be seen as an absence, but it's also the promise of something to come.
That's Paul Madonna. His latest book is On to the Next Dream from City Lights Books. He's the creator of the longtime San Francisco Chronicle art series All Over Coffee. When did you first know you wanted to be an artist, and how did you become one?
I've known for as long as I can remember. Aside from apparently, as my mother tells me, a short period when I was 7 when I wanted to be a truck driver. I think I saw the movie Convoy. After that short period, I was back to being an artist. How did I go about becoming one? That was endless work, really. I moved here in 1994 after I graduated college. I moved from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I just began pursuing doing my own work. I was making zines at the time, which are handmade little books. And I would leave hundreds of copies out for free all over the place. And people would pick them up and write to me. And my idea was, how do you make a living doing your own work? Well, in order for people to pay you for what you do, they first have to know it, and then they have to like it. And I thought, okay, well, my first goal is to get people to know my work. So it took me 10 years before I landed the strip in the Chronicle. And up until then, I'd been showing occasionally. You know, I'd make money here and there, but I wasn't making a full living. Those checks weren't butting up against each other every month.
Were you getting other jobs in order to pay the bills?
Yes. I worked mostly in the art industry. I worked in art shipping, and then I worked in galleries, and I worked in museums as an art installer and art preparator. But I never wanted to do artwork or writing for anybody else because I always wanted to focus on my own work.
That's author and illustrator Paul Madonna. We'll hear the second half of Ben Trefney's interview with him after a quick message.
This is Nina Gensler-Debs here with Stephen Short on Cross Currents. We've just been listening to this Paul Madonna interview, who is such a local Bay Area treasure. I have remembered reading his comic All Over Coffee for years. And it's really awesome that we were able to get him in the studio. Not just him, all sorts of local artists come into KALW every single day. It's one of the magic things about it.
But Paul Madonna's column, a lot of people, including me, know him through his Chronicle drawings.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's not doing that anymore. But he has a book now called On to the Next Dream.
And great news.
And as he was, great news?
Great news is that if you call today, we will give you a copy of that book for a $120 donation.
I think that's just during Cross Currents here, too. So it's only during this program if you want this book. And
it's a beautiful, beautiful book. And the great thing is you're supporting a local artist, you're supporting a local publisher, and you're supporting local public radio. So it's really a triple threat. And you can do that at 800-525-9917 or at KALW.org. This actually is one of my favorite things we've ever given away.
The local publisher that we just mentioned is City Lights Books, which is even more of an institution than Paul Madonna.
Just as much. And beyond that, we have one print of a particular image in the book. It's beautiful. It's called Portrait of San Francisco. It's a framed, signed print. There's only one available, so you have to call and get it. For $600, you can have the print and a book, and it's gorgeous. And if you don't call and take it, I'm going to run away and take it home with me. 800-525-9917. Join some really wonderful people who have already called or clicked.
Well, one of those wonderful people is Susan Palmer from East Palo Alto, and Robert Cohen, who says, now pay attention to this, these are my people. I always pledge to Cross Currents. If this is your first time, pledge today. It's important to do it now. That's Robert Cohen, not me.
Wow, so Robert could just do our job for us.
Well, we all do our job together. We all do this
800-525-9917. Also, local heroes like Michael Galvin and Trevor Hill, who called to donate. You can be a part of it. You can help us get to our challenge. We still need 10 more calls or clicks before the hour's up to get an extra $500 for local public radio. Let me tell you that $500 goes a long way at a station like this to providing more local programming over 32 hours a week, and to bring you global programming.
Go ahead.
525-9917. Love saying that number. KALW.org. Thank you so much.
Welcome back to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We'll return now to the conversation between KALW's Ben Trefney and artist Paul Madonna, whose illustrated column All Over Coffee ran in the San Francisco Chronicle for over a decade.
So the Chronicle seems very much your own work.
It is, yes.
So how did you get that gig?
So at the time, this is early 2000s, like 2003, Phil Bronstein was running the Chronicle, and he was doing television ads saying the Bay Area is ripe with talent, and there's so much creativity here, and we want to do something new. And I'd been working on a long form book, and I took a break, and I'd created All Over Coffee, just sort of putting some ideas together. And it was a cartoonist friend that said, you should send it to the Chronicle. And I thought it would be too odd for them. But they were trying a lot of new stuff. Every week they had new writers, they were trying different cartoonists. And I sent it to them, I remember very distinctly, on a Tuesday, and on a Thursday I got a call. And they had me in a week later, and Phil said, I've been looking for something like this for a long time. And, I didn't know what it was, but something that captured the mood of the city. And what he liked about it and what the creative director liked about it and the art director was that it was unlike anything else in the paper. And that's what they were trying to do. And, working, I didn't actually work for the newspaper. I licensed everything to them. So I worked out of my studio. So I, while I had, I passed everything through an editor, ultimately it was my own work. And, they were very clear. They said, you have 6 months. You can be out of the paper any day. We'll just see how this goes. If you have the readership, you can stay on. And it was as simple as that. And it really, it was, I called it art boot camp. Because for 2 years, I woke up every day and thought this could be the last day that I have a chance to make something and put it in paper. I was publishing 4 days a week for those first 2 years. So it was just, I was just writing, drawing, editing, finishing, sending off to print.
Is it exhausting or exhilarating?
It was both.
That's Paul Madonna. His latest book is On to the Next Dream from City Lights Books. He's the creator of the longtime San Francisco Chronicle art series All Over Coffee. You've made images of so many different corners of the city. What would a particularly creative day for you be like, where you would discover a spot and then allow it to bring something up in you?
Well, what's interesting is while I was working every day, the idea was really born out of taking moments in between your busy life. And it's the when we are stopped on the corner and we sort of have a moment. And I think that those moments are being taken away from our lives because we have a phone in our pocket that we can easily go to. We can distract ourselves. And on one hand, it feels very good because we can be constantly productive or constantly dialed in. And but those moments where I would just sort of take a walk, I try to take a walk every day. And it's something that I do to clear my head or to work out problems. And I think when we don't have without the absence of distraction, there are thoughts that don't come. We don't hear them. It's like a loud music being played all the time. You don't hear whispers. And until you turn it off, then you can hear some other things that can only be said at a low level. And so I had this funny life where I would be getting up. I'd get up at dawn, especially in the spring and fall when the light is the most beautiful. And I would go out and I'd walk around and look for good light. Because a corner that might be beautiful at 6 a.m. isn't necessarily as beautiful to me, at least at noon, because the light would change.
So this book, you said, it kind of marks the end, like with the burn and the growing burn through the images. It kind of marks the end of All Over Coffee.
Yes.
And this book is a closure in a way for you then. Does that mean you're not going to go for your walks around the city to go draw?
I still go for my walks, but I don't draw in the same way. It's kind of a relief to not have to stop or document or make a note and say, oh, I want to come back here and draw this. I've actually been practicing seeing something that's really beautiful. And I have that sort of moment swell up and just letting it go and say, it's okay. I don't have to draw that. And I think ultimately that's good for me because in, 12 years is a significant period of time. If you think about having a job for 12 years, at least when you're in the prime of your life, that's sort of frowned upon. You're supposed to move jobs, as far as I understand, in shorter periods than that if you want to progress, if you want to climb up. But I understood that All Over Coffee was essentially a dream come true. I got to draw and write and put it into the public eye, make a living from it, and just be able to build upon it. And I thought, okay, it's amazing. I'm lucky. I got to have a dream come true. What's even better than that? Wow, being able to go on and have another dream and be able to test that and bring that into reality. And the struggle, the beautiful struggle of being able to make a dream come true.
That's author and artist Paul Madonna speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. Coming up on Cross Currents, we'll continue our celebration of our audience. We have more listener-generated stories about dirigibles in Oakland and government propaganda in Redwood City from our Hey Area project. But first, let's check in with our phone room to see how our spring membership drive is going.
Hello, Nina and Stephen here again. It's really lovely to hear Paul Madonna talk about this next stage in his life and how he can just see an image and let it go. And Paul Madonna just like has such an amazing perspective, both through writing and his speaking and his drawings. So
If you are interested in having more of that in your life, you should totally get these pledge gifts we have. We have a book, his new book called On to the Next Dream, which is a really lovely piece of art. And it's also published by local publisher, $120. It can be yours. And we have one signed frame print.
One.
That's it. You have to call the phone room. $600 for both this beautiful, huge, gorgeous print and a book. 800-525-9917 or kaalw.org. Plus, you'll be getting us closer to meeting this challenge.
Paul Madonna had a dream come true. Our dream is that we meet this goal of getting 18 calls or clicks before the program's over. And that's being made possible
by... Attainable dream.
I think so, yes. Mary Reese in Albany and Catherine and Peter Streetman in Sausalito and Ann McLeod in Mill Valley are helping with this matching gift
An extra
idea.
$500.
So thanks to them. But people who have... But wait, there's more. David Boyer, Ronette O'Neill, and Ray Sussman have also called in and given money towards that. And it's now your turn.
Thank you to them. Thank you to Griffin Thompson, 800-525-9917 or kaalw.org. And Paul Madonna is great, but he's just one of so many artists that we have on all of our programming. On Cross Currents, we have multiple artists weekly, but we also have artists on all of our other programming, whether it's Patchwork Quilt or Folk Music and Beyond. And Stephen, you have local music that you prepare for Cross Currents every day.
Right. If you listen to Cross Currents, at the very end, we typically have today's local music, and I'm the one who puts that together. And it's really fun going through and finding all these different people and places. Ben Trefney, our news director, said that I should be my rule is the eclecticer, the betterer.
Kind of like us.
Meaning, well, it's part of the Cross Currents idea. So that means geographically and stylistically. And it's just fun to do. And you can learn from it, too.
800-525-9917 or kaalw.org not only supports us, but supports exposures for young and old local artists who are doing really important work across all sorts of mediums, like music, like visual art, sculpture, theater, dance, art I'm sure we've even never heard of. So support that kind of local art. Here, KALW, 800-525-9917. I see volunteers with phone open. Call them right now.
Welcome back to Cross Currents. Well, our Hay Area listener-generated reporting project has been extraordinarily popular. So much so, we didn't have time to report anywhere near all the answers for which we've been getting questions. We set to thinking about that, and we figured out a way to get more. A lot more. Over the past couple of months, we've expanded Hay Area to become a weekly feature of Morning Edition and All Things Considered. Our international intern, Jürgen Klemm, works with our Hay Area team of Olivia Henry and Nina Gensler-Debs. They all choose questions he can research and report on. We do the work and then fit the answers into fun-sounding two-minute blocks. Ready to hear one? Here's Nina.
It's time for Hay Area, where we find answers to questions you ask. Why is Redwood City's slogan, "Climate Best by Government Test"? That's what Carrie Tronson wanted to know. And here's the answer from KALW's Jürgen Klemm.
It was back in the roaring 1920s. The economy was growing, businesses were growing, and cities were growing. And Redwood City wanted in on this. So they decided to get an official slogan to attract attention and newcomers. In 1925, the City Real Estate Board offered a $10 prize to the person to come up with the best one. Mr. Wilbur H. Doxey, president of the San Mateo County Title Company, took home the money. Soon, his slogan, "Climate Best by Government Test," was erected above the El Camino Real at the entrance to Redwood City. Only then did people start asking if this claim was true. Mr. Doxey said he had no idea. There had been some rumors about how the German Kaiser Wilhelm Institute had tried to figure out the perfect climate regions on the Earth, and Redwood City was one of them. But none of this was ever confirmed. Then there were rumors that the National Geographic Society had come to this conclusion, but neither did they confirm any of this. The only written record about this claim dates back to Redwood City's local newspaper on September 29, 1921. Quote, "Redwood City, according to government statistics, has the finest climate in the United States. That's it. So why is Redwood City's slogan "climate best by government test"? Well, there isn't really a way to back this claim or to prove it wrong, but a catchy slogan, isn't it?
You can find lots of Hey Area shorts at our website, kalw.org, and just search Hey Area. And while you're there, help us out with our spring membership drive. So, are you ready to hear another answer? Okay, so the question came from listener Robert Weiner. And this time, sound engineer Ted Muldoon followed up to get him his answer. Let's listen to what happened.
Hello.
Hi, is this Robert Weiner?
Yes, it is.
This is Ted Muldoon from KALW. I'm calling about your Hey Area submission.
Great.
Where you ask a question and we find the answer.
So my question was, with the Oakland Tribune building built with a flagpole on top so dirigibles could dock there. So have you found the answer yet?
Hello.
Is this the Avery Truffleman? From 99% Invisible?
The only one.
You did a story about the neon clock on the Tribune Tower. Do you know if dirigibles used to dock to the flagpole?
I can't say that I do, but the person who keeps the neon and like maintains it on a regular basis is a fellow by the name of John Law. He referred to himself as the Quasimodo of Oakland.
Hopefully a little bit handsomer, and I'm not all bent over, and for my age, I'm pretty spry. John Law here. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
You know, I'm hanging in there, literally. I'm in the clock right now, yeah.
So one of our listeners wanted to know if dirigibles used to dock to the flagpole atop the Tribune Tower. Is that true?
Yes, they did. As far as I understand it, it was actually more a series of attempts. And the afternoon winds that typically kick up here in the bay were a real problem for the dirigibles. And there are a couple of instances that I've heard about where they had near misses, or the dirigibles were almost rammed into the building, and they decided to kind of nix it after that. And now on the 20th floor is the walk-around balcony, which is where the people would have landed.
It sounds like the main way of getting in and out of a dirigible back in the day is using a ladder.
Yeah.
And then you'd go down to a catwalk. That would just be a very intense family vacation.
That would be a family that gets along very well, I hope.
That was Ted Muldoon answering listener Robert Weiner's question about docking dirigibles in Oakland's Tribune Tower. If you've got questions, we want to answer them. Go to kalw.org and tell us what you're curious about on our Hey Area form. And while you're there, why don't you take a moment to help us out with our spring membership drive? I'll hand it off to my friends in the pledge room to tell you the number to call.
The number to call is 800-525-9917. This is Nina Gensler-Debs here with Stephen Short. We really do want to hear what you want to know about the Bay Area. So if you call or if you click, tell us what you want to know. And
this
also
is
tell
interactive
us,
radio.
Yeah. Tell us what you think we're doing great. Tell us what you think needs work. We want to hear from you. You're a part of this KLW family, and your support is so important, is because it what keeps us going. 72% of our funding comes from individual listeners. So that's really important, but it's also so important for us to hear from you.
1-800-525-9917 or kalw.org. If you are already a supporter of the station, we thank you sincerely. And the sooner we reach our goal, the sooner we end this drive. So why not help make it sooner than later?
I think that's true. And particularly right now, we have a challenge. We need 18 calls or clicks by the end of the hour to get an extra $500. We are so close. We need
pretty close.
Very close. Oh my God, 2 minutes to get two more calls and clicks. There are phones open in the phone room. There is a online that is open 100% of the time. We need you to do it now to get that extra money. There is some urgency. It's on the line, people.
And we still have the Paul Madonna books.
We sure do.
I don't know that the print
I think
is
we still have now. The print. We have one print. It is beautiful. It is huge. I can see it from where I am sitting. It is signed. It would look great in your living room. Let's be real. It's San Francisco. Maybe you don't have a living room. In your kitchen, in your bathroom. $600, 800-525-9917. And it comes with a book.
This is not a time to make KALW great again. This is a time to keep KALW great. Don't you want to be part of this? Many hands make light work. We're not asking you to do the whole thing.
That's
you
true.
Just put in your part. whether it's $10,000 or $10 or somewhere in between.
And we have such great listeners. To give you an example, we had one listener who just called in and donated and also gave us a joke, two radio antenna got married. The wedding was okay, but the reception was phenomenal. You want to be the kind of person who hangs out in the company of people who make terrible jokes like that. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
That's right.
And I think one of the great things about local public radio is such an important way to connect to where you live if you've been here for your whole life like me or if you just moved here.
That's part of the reason I like to do history stories. Well, one is the fact that the longer it takes me to do them, the more historic they are.
But
another bad joke. But it gives you an idea of place where you are. Part of the reason the Bay Area is as interesting as it is because people from all over the world have come here. But because they've come from all over the world, they don't have much idea about what has happened here before they arrived. So these little history pieces that we do is a way to find out something about where you live.
It's a way to connect, and it's a way to feel part of a team, be part of the team that gets us to our goal. 18 calls or clicks by the end of the hour. We still need two. Oh, my God, we only have one more minute to do it. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Thank you so much for joining us.